You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by business and political expert Jay Amernick, political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, and me, journalist in all media, Heather Vail, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to the show on this Wednesday, December the 10th. We are getting closer and closer to the end of the year. It's gone extremely fast, but we've had a lot of fun here on the show for this year. I'm Heather Vail, and I'm here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay is a strategic planner who helps his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. He and or his company serve as the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business in the U.S. He also has a development lab that creates smartphone apps and other inventions. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur and internet marketer with a degree in philosophy. His political development is known as the solution, and that solution is to cap and prioritize government spending. I'm Heather Vail, also known as the Unwrapper, premier freelance interviewer and journalist. Hey guys, welcome to the show today.
Jay.
Hey, how are you, Heather?
I don't hear anybody.
Yes.
Oh, there you are. What happened?
Yeah, you're breaking up just a little bit on the Skype call.
Okay. Maybe Doug has to fix that.
Yeah, Skype was delaying your speech, and so from your point of view, there was silence, but we just heard it.
Yes, there was. Indeed, there
yes,
was.
But I'm here. Yes. I'm here, people.
Okay.
I'm here, America.
All right.
And everything's good.
Is your imaginary friend with you?
Always. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So for those of you who don't know, who didn't see that, what's up this week? Look, for those of you who do not live in Las Vegas, and I'm sure it's this way in sort of any large cosmopolitan city, for those of us who do a lot of networking and a lot of out and about, it's a very busy, busy season. You know, we have like two or three events a night that we have to stop by and say hello and do the do.
We have to. Of course.
Well, yeah, actually at this point I'm only doing things that I really need to go see somebody. Yeah. Because I can't, because otherwise I'd look worse than I do now.
Okay. Are you going tonight?
Yeah. Yes, I am actually. Tonight? It's on my side of town, so I figured I'll stop by.
Yeah, it's close by.
And it's at a new and exciting venue, so I think it'll be an interesting crowd, and looking forward to it. Haven't been in a while, so.
Cool. Rick, what's going on in Colorado?
We're debating gun control in the House, because we have all these Nerf guns now, and if you have four family members with ADHD, which means no impulse control, and Nerf guns, watch out.
All right. Nerf guns don't taunt people. Only people taunt people. So.
Yeah.
There we
go.
It
looks like there's a little bit of havoc has been going on behind you there, Rick, too, because you've got stuff all over the place today. Yeah.
Well, we have our big screen with our video game stuff, so all the controllers are there, and
blankets on the floor, random chairs. Yeah.
It's a house. It's a house.
It looks fun. It looks fun. Yeah.
It's never been cleaner. It's just usually you see it this way.
Okay.
So.
It's all how it's framed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Life is all about perspective. Yes, indeed.
Yeah,
all right. So, Rick, tell us more about this solution that you've come up with.
The solution is to cap and prioritize government spending. And if you think about it, the political right has been trying to cap government spending in some way for, 80 years? And they failed completely. And the reason they failed completely is because they haven't understood that a cap alone is never going to be politically viable. And even if it is, it'll be eroded very quickly. And so a cap must be combined with some way of softening the cap without weakening the cap. And what does that mean? Well, with a cap, you have a certain pool of money. And the question is, how well can you spend that money? And can you spend that money in ways that will be attractive to the political left without undermining the integrity of government, without creating perverse incentives? And the answer is yes, if you actually take the time to prioritize, to rank all the spending from top to bottom, so the most important spending is on top, and the waste, fraud, and abuse is exposed on the bottom. This is a way of helping people who need help most and helping them with ideas that help them most without allowing politicians to corrupt the process. The transparency protects the integrity of the budget. And so cap and prioritize. We can limit the government like the right wants, and then within those limits, help the people who need help most like the left wants. That's the solution.
Okay. Jay, commentary?
It's a terrible idea. No, I'm kidding. It's a fantastic idea. And
I got a gun.
Yeah, exactly. I understand. No, we will. At all, we will not need coercion and force to push it through. Once people, again, sort of lift the fog, from their heads and actually sort of open up their minds a little bit and listen. And get away from all the silliness of what has become partisan politics in this country. And that's that's been what my inside perspective has been about for the past several weeks, and today is no exception. But it's a matter of getting people to sit down and listen. And we'll start with the politicians. Actually, that's where not only are they the leaders, but that's they're the ones who will actually sit and listen and intellectualize this first, besides the hoi polloi, the masses, the vox populi.
This is a little bit off topic, but I just had a great idea.
Okay.
We should have like a webcam sits on top of your computer if it's not built in. We should have like Nerf guns that are positioned on top of your computer, and then they can be aimed remotely. And then during these kind of webinar, teleseminar kind of things, the viewers can decide, oh, we don't like that idea, and then we can shoot each other, remotely.
So two things, actually. So one, Elvis actually used to shoot his TV.
Really?
And in the 70s, some guy invented, they were like foam rubber bricks, and he would throw them at the TV, there was a shot. It was on the news. It was either on the news or one of those shows, Real People, or one of those 70s shows like that. And he's going to his son, yeah, brick that guy, and then the kid would throw the brick at the TV.
Did they ever
clearly
market those?
Catch on because what? Yeah.
Did they ever? They market. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I don't remember that.
Well, you were in Canada.
Okay. Yes, I was in Canada.
No.
Yes.
What's wrong with that? I'm saying you were in Canada.
In Canada, they don't throw bricks at the TV. Yeah, you're right. Okay. That's clearly an American.
No, I didn't say that.
Yeah, because icicles are more plentiful and less expensive.
Snowballs work well.
Blocks of ice. Yeah, snowballs. All right.
Yes.
So let's have the top story. Ready? You better be.
We're the top story.
All right. No, you're not.
Wait. First, Jay and I must guess the top story. I'm going to guess CIA report.
And Jay's going to guess.
What's your guess?
Yeah, I'm going to guess CIA. Yeah, actually, I was thinking that too, because I was just sort of looking over some headlines this morning, and CIA seems to be the thing that's jumping out.
We got a couple of winners here.
Okay.
Here we go. Senior U.S. officials who authorized and carried out torture as part of former President George W. Bush's national security policy must be prosecuted, says a top U.N. special investigator today. Ben Emmerson, the U.N. specialist on counterterrorism and human rights, added that all CIA and other U.S. officials who used waterboarding and other torture techniques need to be prosecuted as well. He was responding to the Senate Intelligence Committee report released yesterday, which lays out the CIA's harsh interrogation techniques at secret overseas facilities after the 9/11 terror attacks. The report shows there was a clear policy laid out at a high level within the Bush administration, which allowed systematic crimes and gross violations of international human rights law. It sparked a firestorm of controversy in the U.S. and abroad. President Barack Obama said the interrogation techniques did significant damage to America's standing in the world and made it harder to pursue interests with allies. Emerson said the fact that the policies revealed in this report were authorized at a high level within the U.S. government is no excuse, and in fact only reinforces the need for criminal accountability. European Union spokeswoman Catherine Ray emphasized the Obama administration has worked since 2009 to see that torture is not used anymore, but said that commitment should be made law. Bush approved the program through a covert finding in 2002, but he wasn't briefed by the CIA on the details until 4 years later. Obama banned waterboarding and other tactics, yet other aspects of Bush's national security policies remain in effect, such as the U.S. detention center at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and sweeping government surveillance programs. According to Emerson, international law prohibits granting immunity to public officials who allow the use of torture, and this applies not just to the actual perpetrators, but also to those who plan and authorize it. As a result, he said, the U.S. government is legally obliged to bring those responsible to justice. Human Rights Watch's executive director Kenneth Roth also said that unless officials are prosecuted, torture will remain a policy option for future presidents. All right. Commentary, Jay?
Okay, so I'll start with this. Actually, I'll start with this. Okay, so, you know, whether you like it or not, we caught bin Laden because of waterboarding. That's the bottom line. We got the information out of the people because they were waterboarded several times. They are still alive. They are still healthy. They are still fine. And I just will go on record as saying I oppose torture that leaves somebody permanently damaged and or dead, obviously. Waterboarding is what I would put under the category of physical pressure. It doesn't kill you, and it doesn't leave any permanent
damage. But it could
damage.
Kill you. It could kill you.
Well, that's why it needs to be administered correctly. But you're not going to get information out of somebody unless they think they're really going to die. So that's that. Two. The UN is a useless and feckless organization and has literally no credibility. Human Rights Watch has somewhat less standing. So if they want to try to, you know, prosecute our CIA agents, I say, come on into America and try to come and get them. That's where I am on this. Sorry to sound like the super patriot here, but I really, the UN is so corrupt. And so useless and has gotten so far away from what FDR had in mind that he had proposed at the Dumbarton Oaks talks that it's just sad. So that's where okay. I am.
All right, Rick, agree, disagree?
Well, why are you apologizing for being a super patriot? That's a good thing.
Okay.
Okay. If you compare what we're doing to some ideal vision of ideal society, well, you're always going to find that we suck. Because compared to the ideal, the imaginary ideal, everything in the real world is lacking. But looking at it another way, if you compare what we're doing today with what was done in the past, we've made amazing progress. I mean, just Google medieval torture device. I mean, the ways of inflicting pain in back in the day for really minor things, typically, basically I disagree with you and I'm in charge, it was amazing. And the genocide that existed back in the day, I mean, you know, the Romans would take over, a city and just decimate it to plunder its riches and then, mass rape, etc. And nowadays, at war, when we've been attacked, we drip some water in the nose of some people, and that's torture. Our definition of torture has no relation to the original word. So, is this ideal? No, it's not ideal. Again, absolutely not. And so, do we want to keep doing it? Well, we'd like the world to be safer and not require us to do it. But at war, which we were at the time, you know, you got to make some tough choices. And what's interesting here is that Obama, in order to not have to torture people, has upped the drone attacks and tries to kill them so that they're not alive to be tortured. But which is worse? I don't. There's arguments either way. But my main point is, let's put this in perspective, and the world is getting safer. The need for this is going down. The techniques we're using are better than we've used in the past, and better than all of our enemies use, by the way. So we're still leading the world in terms of a march towards peace. It's just that And until we have peace, we need a defense, we need information, and we need to get the bad guys. And that requires some waterboarding every now and then.
All right, so neither of you think that there should be any criminal prosecution.
Oh no, I say the UN should definitely criminally prosecute, and I say, come on into to our country and try to get them. Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'll go on trial instead of one of the CIA agents, and I will tell the UN, the UN's useless whoever, to come and get me. They are so critical of us and all the free countries, and will let every third world savage get away with literally rape and murder. And it's just, it's infuriating. And I don't know why we continue to be part of this organization.
Well,
they are absolutely useless. You know where they are? The UN is it's the cantina scene in Star Wars. It's just the dregs of humanity.
I think we have just experienced the first Jay's rant.
Yes. Against the UN.
Yeah, but I disagree. But we'll come back after the break.
Okay,
we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back in a few minutes on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Rick Raddatz and Jabberjay Amernick. We've just come up with a new nickname for Jay during the break. Here you have it. This is the first time going public with it. Jabberjay Amernick. Jabberjay, what do you have to say?
It has a flow to it.
It does. I like it. But I think we left off. Rick Rad had something else he wanted to say.
Well, okay. So I understand the rant or the jabber that Jay just unleashed there. that the UN is feckless. It's corrupt. It has perverse incentives. It's our enemies holding us to a higher standard than they hold themselves. And so I agree with all of that. But they have a role in making progress. And let me tell you what that role is. Progress is when we as a species get more and more upset at smaller and smaller things. That's progress.
Okay.
That's what makes it continue to be progress, even as the world is actually a much better place. Anyone alive in medieval times would be happy to be alive now.
Would be happy to be waterboarded.
Well, if that was their punishment,
Iron Maiden, yes.
The odds of being tortured in the medieval era, and the odds of being tortured now is kind of like winning the lottery. I mean, you know, the odds are so low, it's just not going to happen to you. So, and your cat behind you agrees, by the way. I saw her nodding her head. so the point is that all of the people who are shocked. That during wartime we drip some water in the nose of people. That shock is part of progress. And even though they're being irrational and they're out of the loop in terms of where we've been in the past, the fact that they exist is part of what keeps us becoming better as a country, better as a species. And I'll just add that we do have a tax that we have to pay, a price we have to pay, as being the world's number one and essentially only superpower, okay? And that tax is that we are held to a higher standard. We are, all these claims of hypocrisy get labeled at us or thrown at us, not our enemies who are doing far worse. And that's just the price you pay for being the best. And not that we're always the best in every possible way you can ever measure it, but on average, we exceed every other average of every other nation on Earth. And so I am still super patriot, but I still acknowledge the role that these loonies have to play in confusing torture for what we're doing.
So what you're saying is not torture to waterboard someone?
Yeah, that's not torture. Medieval torture device. That's torture. I'll give you an example. Imagine being naked and having giant weights attached to your feet, and you're sitting atop of a rusty iron triangle until you split in two.
Oh, my God.
Okay. And that's not the worst of them. I dare you to Google medieval torture device. Okay, so we have come a long way, Papa Smurf.
Yes. Yeah, but I will. I do want to qualify saying waterboarding is actually slightly more than just dripping some water in people's noses. It's actually quite a horrifying experience.
Well, they're upside down.
But to that I say, good. These are not. This isn't June Cleaver we're dealing with here. These are people who would just as soon slice off your head as talk to you. So I if we want to get some information out of them, you have to scare the living bejesus out of them.
Doesn't it involve putting a wet cloth over so they can't breathe as well?
Yes.
No.
And
they can breathe.
And it's a dip, and it's like, and it's would you like to talk? Boom. Would you like to talk? Boom. Would you like to talk? Boom. Some of those guys have lasted like 17 times before they say, okay, finally, yes, we'll talk.
My understanding is that they can breathe the whole time, but they feel like they can't.
Okay, and it's I don't think they can.
No,
I don't think they can. I think they're suffocating. They've got wet cloth over their mouth and nose.
No. Well, at least what I've read about it is the whole point of waterboarding is to make them have the illusion that they're drowning when actually they're
illusion
not.
Illusion that they're drowning, yes. They're not actually drowning. However, they are actually unable to breathe during those moments.
Okay, well, we'll have to look that one up. As another aside, I believe special forces in the U.S., I'm not sure which special forces, maybe all of them, maybe just some of them, get waterboarded as part of their training so that they know what it's like when they go overseas and get captured. So, I mean, this is something we put our own people through.
Okay.
So.
Yes. There should be a distinction between physical pressure and torture.
In fact, the Boy Scouts are going to make it a merit badge. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
Waterboarding merit badge.
Well,
all right.
Two of them.
So basically,
one for doing it, one for being on the receiving side.
Okay. So where do we draw the line? Is it carte blanche? You can do whatever you want to get information out of the so-called enemy, or do we draw the line at rusty triangles and splitting people in two?
No, I think you draw the line at something that is going to that kills somebody or that leaves them permanently damaged. Like
they can die from waterboarding, though. They could die.
Not if it's administered properly and not if it's monitored properly.
Okay.
If somebody's screaming, I can't breathe, I got news for you. You can breathe. If you can talk, you can breathe. You may feel like you can't breathe. Because air is coming through your lungs in order to talk.
Jay, you picked a very unfortunate choice of words there because...
In
New York... It was a big black guy who was selling cigarettes illegally. What a heinous crime.
Right.
Who was videotaped saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, and he couldn't breathe and he died. So,
yeah.
I'll admit that, no matter what, there's always a danger. But, you know, we're at war. Right.
Yes. And again, the person being waterboarded has to know that they can possibly die from it. Otherwise, it's not effective. There are other things you can do too.
Okay, so again, where do we draw the line? We draw the line at something that can kill them,
or permanently damaged.
They could get brain damage from not breathing for long enough. So
it has to be like 5 minutes. They're not kept under for 5 minutes. They're kept under for a couple seconds.
So we know for a fact. We know for a fact that it takes 5 minutes of not breathing before brain damage sets in.
I believe it's either 5 or 15. I can't remember.
Heather is right. I am wrong. You do cut off breathing for a short time.
Okay.
Yay! I'm right.
Time.
Yay! For a short time. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Not enough
do.
To damage them. A brain damage.
You know that.
Yeah, but a brain damaged individual is not going to give you good information, so it doesn't make any sense to brain damage to allow them to become brain damaged. They're not kept under that long at a time. They're allowed to sort of recoup and then back down, which is also
the most likely way they can die is if they throw up and then drown in their own vomit.
Yeah, that's true too.
Okay, so it's not a completely safe thing. But you know.
It's also not an Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
Okay, but then the question becomes, how rampant is it? How often are they doing it? How many people do they waterboard before getting information from one? Are they only saving it for the top people who definitely have the answers? Are they doing it willy-nilly all over the place? So, yeah, you know, there's some other information we need to know.
Well, that's all in the report, I believe, from what I've read, that they did it to three people. And the evidence directly led to the discovery of Osama bin Laden's whereabouts. And the other people had much, much lesser types of interrogation that I think, I'm not going to go into details. You can read the report. But it's, you know, that's the worst of it. And then there's everything else is left, playing rock music or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it all. There's a huge spectrum there.
Yeah. They played rock music as torture?
Because it can be, and when it's turned up very loud and it's constant, it's incredibly disorienting. You can, and it's also added to things like, yeah, well, also what they'll do is, there's also sleep deprivation. They'll switch your days and nights on you. You have no idea what time it is, what day it is, how old you are anymore. I mean, it's just, you lose all sense of everything. That doesn't leave you permanently damaged, and quite often you get them in such a weakened mental state that you get information as well.
Okay,
but
that falls under the category of torture.
No, that falls under the category of torture, but I think it's physical pressure. I think it's perfectly acceptable to do that, to try to get information out of somebody. If they would just talk in the beginning, they'd be fine.
Okay.
I think we need to redefine what torture is. I think that falls under the category of physical pressure. Torture is leaving somebody permanently damaged and or dead.
I don't think that's the definition of torture. I think torture.
No, it's not. You didn't listen to what I said. It's not the definition.
Oh, you want to recreate the definition? Okay.
That was the initial definition, and if you break down the sort of the Latin roots of it, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Well, then I think torture is torture, and torture with intent to kill is a torture with intent to kill. So, I mean, we can make degrees the same way they have different degrees of murder charges. They have manslaughter, they have first degree murder, they have third degree. So, same thing. There's different degrees of torture. It's all torture. It's all torture. Someone still gets tortured, but...
Nah, there's different degrees of interrogation, and at the higher end is torture.
Right.
But Jay is saying it's not torture unless they're dead, unless they...
Or damaged. Yeah, no, it's
dead
it's
or damaged.
And I think those are acceptable techniques to use in order to get information to protect us and save lives.
Here's what I say. This is the final statement because it's so true. No one can argue with it. You ready?
Okay. Yeah.
If you have a situation where it's okay to kill the enemy, it's also okay to torture the enemy. That's it.
Okay.
Okay. They attack us. We're at war. It's okay to kill them. Therefore, it's also okay to torture some of them, especially with the ways that we restrict who we use the worst of the torture for. And so the only question is, are we at war? Can we kill the enemy? And if we can, everything else is okay because we're trying to save lives, trying to end the war, trying to do the right thing.
So as soon as we're at war, murder's okay.
Yes. Clearly.
Okay. It's not murder at that point.
There's
a very different distinction there.
If you kill someone, it's murder.
If you kill someone in self defense, it's self defense.
And you're using a very clumsy use of the word murder. It's very specific. And even if you go back to not to get all religious here, but if you go back to the Ten Commandments, the Ten Commandments, it's not thou shalt not kill. It's actually if you translate it from Hebrew, it's thou shalt not commit murder. They were very specific about what killing was during war. Or what killing was during a situation of self-defense and protecting your family. Very different things.
Okay.
So it is very different. The distinction made, though, when it's just to play devil's advocate a little bit here, it's that when it's combat on the battlefield, it's one thing. Once that individual has been captured, they are then our responsibility, almost a ward of the state in a way. They're our responsibility, and that's why they get treated differently, allegedly, or supposedly, or idealistically.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with Inside Perspective with Jabberjay Emmernick. We'll be back in a few minutes on the political stick. Welcome back to The Pickle Fix. I'm Heather Vail here with Rick Rad Raditz and Jabberjay Amernick, my co-host. We're just playing around with some new nicknames. Jay doesn't like his new nickname, Jabberjay, but everybody else thinks it fits perfectly. So for now, it's going to stick. And we're going to call his inside perspective segment affectionately Jabberjay's Jabber. Or should it just be Jay's Jabber? What do you think? All right. Anyway, take it away, Jabberjay. Inside perspective.
Thank you, Heather Visigoth.
What?
See, combine your last names, made a little play on words there. The Visigoths were
vicious. No, Jabberjay, that's a complete fail. I'm sorry. Try again.
Yeah.
What, Vail Goss and Visigoth? Give me a break.
Okay, but it's just fail now.
It's too obscure a reference.
Bring back the Goss!
All right.
I'm all about the Goss. All right. The inside perspective today.
Okay, maybe like Heather Beyond the Pale Veil is. At least it rhymes.
All right, go Jabberjay. Go Jabberjay. Go Jabberjay.
We're waiting. Go.
All right. This is, again, still part of my series of making the Vox Populi a little smarter. And again, I sort of touched on it accidentally. I didn't mean to. I see, again, it's these, people making these statements about this happened and this didn't happen, and they're completely unrelated. So these were basically sort of, Wall Street bankers don't get arrested, but this happened, that Ferguson and all this nonsense. I will comment on the judicial branch, even though it is the one I'm least versed in, but I will tell you this, being the son of a lawyer, every case is different. You cannot compare. Yes, it is true that sometimes cases will set a precedent and then can be used in a case that happens more often in civil court, by the way, than it does in criminal court. But that's the bottom line, is that every case is different, and do not compare what happened in Ferguson to what a Wall Street banker may or may have not done. And that is my inside perspective. Treat everything just if we intellectualize things more and have a reasoned discussion and not so emotional, we will be able to get to the truth and not go off on these crazy flights of fancy and make ourselves so angry and upset and hate filled.
That was a really short jabber.
Yeah, I'm not impressed.
Late jab.
Yeah, it sounded kind of half-assed, didn't it, Rick?
It's like a Friars Club roast in here today. What the hell happened to me? Oh my god!
We're torturing you.
This is, trust me.
It's okay because you're not gonna die. So
yeah,
just saying.
No, but I may kill somebody.
It's not torture. Just don't call it torture.
Oh, it's physical pressure. Actually, it's not even physical. It's mental pressure.
It's haunting. Give me the Nerf gun.
Yeah, well, I'm working on that. Okay, so your point is don't compare things to other things. I think that's impossible. I think the whole body of human knowledge is comparing things to each other and figuring them out. Identification and integration.
That's how we adjudicate the law. And it has nothing to do with how fair or unfair the entire system is.
I think it's unavoidable. It's necessary, in fact. It's good to compare things. And the fact that some people compare things poorly is unavoidable, too. So I think your inside perspective.
The poor comparisons, though, still have a point.
What's that?
The poor comparisons still have a point. They're still thought-provoking. They still make people pause and go, hmm.
No, because they get people off on a false quest on something that's completely unrelated. To compare what happened in Ferguson to what happens on Wall Street is ridiculous. It's you're there. I hate to say it's comparing apples and oranges.
Okay, give us the quote.
What quote? It was I've seen a couple of them. It was like a meme. It was like, so this happens in Ferguson, but for selling cigarettes, he gets killed. For ripping off everybody's pension fund, this guy doesn't get anything. It's like, well, first of all, we don't know that that happened. Most people can't really. Finance is so murky, so bizarre.
I think they have a great point.
Okay. But there are different cases and there are different and there are different precedents. And also, sometimes the Wall Street banker who has a great deal of money actually pays the fine as opposed to going to prison. And that's actually sort of the purpose of the courts anyway, is to extort money from people.
But here's the point, is that there is a comparison. You get two people committing a crime, and one creates great damage to the society. One doesn't. You know, selling loose cigarettes is not a great damage to society. One ends up dead. One pays a small fine if they get caught at all. In fact, maybe they get bailed out. And so on that level, there's a comparison. And now the question is, how are they different? Oh, well, one resisted arrest, and the other one didn't. That's a big difference right there. We can go on. But I think I agree with you that a lot of these comparisons are false. And actually, my beef earlier in the show was related in that if you compare things to the imaginary ideal, that's not helpful because everything is always less than the ideal. It doesn't tell you anything. You need to do that, but you also need to compare it to the past, and you need to say what's possible and how can we do better, and then let's do a little better. I think all these comparisons are unavoidable and even necessary, even if they're wrong. That's part of the process.
No, that wasn't my issue. My issue is that I think we should be a little bit more intellectual about it and thoughtful about it.
Yeah.
So Jay's saying, think about it, but don't put a meme on Facebook.
Yes.
Okay. But
we have to win the meme war to end the meme war.
I'll be memeing from behind.
Yeah.
However, you know, these memes at least get people talking, get people thinking. Sometimes it gets them not thinking. But, you know, that's like saying,
oh, you know, my son listens to rap music, so he's getting into music. No. It's garbage. Or worse than that, but, you know, my son's watching The Bachelor, so he's getting into theater. That's like garbage. It's garbage for the mind. These memes and the way that we're sort of getting everybody to think is garbage for the mind, and it's eroding the critical thought process.
Okay, Rick, do you think that's true?
I think so, but I could you repeat the whole thing? I wasn't listening. I was looking up the origin of the word meme, is because it interested me, and I thought it came from maybe the book The Selfish Gene that does mention memes. I think that's the first reference. This is the first one I know about. But anyway, okay.
What year was that?
I think that was the late 70s.
Okay.
Early 80s.
Yeah. Okay. So Jay, what did you say?
Yeah, we weren't. Neither one of us were listening.
I totally forgot what Jay said.
For Christ's sake.
What did you say?
I said that it's the equivalent of saying, oh, you know, my son watches The Bachelor, so he's getting into theater. It's garbage for the mind. These things are the same thing. And it erodes the critical thought process.
So memes erode thought.
No, not memes, but unthought, not so memes as
ideas
a meme. But
erode thought. Ooh.
And ideas foster thought.
Okay, do you want to know an idea that's just absolutely mind-blowing?
Yeah.
Okay, I saw this on Facebook, so it must be true. This MIT scientist guy, or theorist guy, physicist, figured out that chemical systems, physical systems, obviously go towards maximum entropy, maximum randomness, and that a system will find more efficient ways to do that. Okay, just because of its nature. And that could explain how life began, because we are a more efficient way of marching towards entropy. And, you know, life is in general, and humans especially. And so that means the purpose of life is to consume, and in a way destroy. And so that physical law predicts that we will, as a society, create capitalism and let it run amok to the point where it will destroy the planet. And that's our purpose, in fact. However, taking it even further, we can actually discover that we will likely, just in time, understand this and stop that, become sustainable, so that we then may live on to destroy the universe. So
sounds like a really good science fiction plot.
It's actually not so science fiction. I mean, if there are some archaeological sites on the planet that they found that sort of predate what we thought was human history. Göbekli Tepe is one I believe it's in Turkey. And then there's one, I'll say the name and everybody will get a laugh out of it, but I think it's in Peru. And I believe it's pronounced Sacsayhuaman, which of course sounds, like something else. But these are very old sites that predate what we thought was human history. So it gives you sort of pause to think, like, what was there a civilization here before something apocalyptic happened, and then here we are? Or how many times did it happen on the planet? Their planet is considerably older, we're now learning, than we initially thought. So,
yeah. Okay. All right, so we're going to take another quick break. We're coming right back with Rick's rant and also a history lesson on the origin of the word memes. We'll be right back with you on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail, here with my co-hosts Jabberjay Emmernick and Rick Raddatz. Before the break, we had Jay's jabber, and he went on about memes, and we have discovered the origin. Rick looked it up. Rick has discovered the origin of the word memes, so share it with us quickly before we go into the outside perspective, a.k.a. Rick's rant.
Yeah, there's a book by Richard Dawkins called The Selfish Gene that talks about how... in DNA, the gene is kind of the first level of selfishness. It's kind of an analogy to understand how genes work. And in that book, he coined the term meme to also draw a parallel to how ideas, in kind of the dialogue that we have as humans, also share similar properties. And he didn't go into that too deeply, but he coined the word meme to be an idea that spreads, essentially. And on the internet, we've kind of taken over that word to have it mean a photo that has text on it that is funny or poignant or whatever and gets spread around, which I think is a version of what Richard Dawkins was talking about. So I don't think it's really a corruption of his word. It's actually a good application of it.
It's an extension, actually, a practical application of.
And see, first of all, he's making a comparison, Jay. So there you go, comparing one thing to another.
I didn't say that. you're taking what I said out of context. Comparing something is always good. Not always good. It can be a good thing. What I'm saying is, when you compare something that has no relation to the other, and then try to correlate them. To rally the vox populi is a bad thing, because it's an unintellectual argument.
So I actually first heard the word meme used a lot a few years ago when both Randy Gage and Mark Joyner were using it, and they were using it to kind of talk about a theory or like a message that we get from media or from society. For example, Randy Gage, one of his memes that he talked about a lot was that rich people are greedy. And we see that again in movies, and we hear it from the media. So it's like it's more like a concept rather than an image. I mean, you can't make an image saying rich people are greedy and expect it to go viral, but it's still me.
Guess again. So rich people are greedy was exactly the message that someone's trying to get across by comparing Ferguson to a Wall Street banker.
Right, yeah. It's an extension of the meme. Yeah, it's an extension of the meme. Right. But the actual image, I don't think we should call the actual images memes, but now we do. But, it's just an illustration of a bigger meme.
It can be a general thing like what we call.
But the image itself is not the meme. The image itself is an illustration of the meme, which is a bigger concept.
All right.
So, but anyway, we understand that not everyone does. So let's just move on. Let's have Rick's rant, officially known as the outside perspective, but affectionately known as Rick's rant. Go ahead and rant, Rick.
Okay, I guess I'll rant on greed.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of confusion about greed. People think that you're greedy if you, for example, vote for limited government, because you should be more helpful than that. You should be proud to pay your taxes and so on. So what's going on here? What's going on here is that there are five ways to be greedy, and only five, okay? There are five ways to be greedy. You can be greedy as an individual. You can be greedy as a voter. You can be greedy as a politician. You can be greedy as a foreign person or foreign country, etc. And then you can also be greedy relative to the future, meaning we could steal from the future. We can be greedy just as living beings if we are not living sustainably. And these are the five contexts of greed. Now, these exist simply because humans exist. Okay? I mean, we want to live, and so we want stuff. And there is a disagreement about how much stuff we should get, and so we say, if you want too much, you're greedy. But just because we exist and we disagree, we're going to end up having some people be greedy. That's just the top end of the spectrum. The question isn't should people be greedy or not. They are. The question is how should we harness it for the good? And we figured out how to do that with capitalism because it rewards individuals for thinking about other people's needs, consumers. We figured out how to do that with politics, with elections and free speech, so that greedy politicians are forced to pander to the people instead of the opposite way around. We figured out how to do that with foreign greed because our national defense stops people from just taking our resources. They have to negotiate with us first instead, diplomacy. And now we're debating how to handle greed in the voters. Okay, if a lot of voters want stuff from government, they can, you know, no individual voter might be too greedy, but as a collective force, it's too much. And so that's where we have to set some limits, cap, and then we have to take what's available and prioritize it, and that's cap and prioritize. So really, cap and prioritize is the same thing as capitalism or democracy or national defense. It's just harnessing a different type of greed. So to those voters who want stuff from government, who want government to be very helpful, be careful, because you, in a way, are in danger of being greedy yourself, not individually, but as a collective force. And so we, the voters, have to worry about voter greed in aggregate and put a cap on our taxing and our spending, and then spend as best we can. So there you go, greed.
Okay. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, and I think there's also sort of a fine line between self-interest and greed. And also I would suggest it's sort of greed to what end? If an individual or an entity or what have you wants to amass a great deal of wealth, well, it's to what purpose? Do they want to do it because they want to, you know, start an international criminal organization and enslave the world? Or is it because they see a lot of problems and they want to spend $50 million fighting some particular disease or something like that? So it's again, it's to what end? And also, I will just say, in defense of the so-called 1%, they give away a great deal of money. I've been involved with several 501c3s, and the people on the boards who write the checks for $100,000 and more tend to be very rich people and very generous people. So I'll just say that.
Yeah.
And that's a version of good greed, actually, is that they've decided they have all this money and the world has been very good to them and they've decided to give back. They're under no obligation to do so.
Yeah. That was kind of Randy Gage's purpose for bringing that up as a meme in the first place, is that that's the message that we get given repeatedly through media,
right,
through society. But but rich people help others and don't. See, when someone has the belief that rich people are greedy, they're never going to be rich because they don't want to be perceived as that greedy person. So they keep themselves poor and they think it's more spiritual. They think it's better. And his point is, no, it's not better because you can help more people when you have money. So
right.
Don't.
But, well, there's also, I think, the concept of the fear of failure. And people people like to say, okay, I'm not whole, and the reason I'm not whole is because of this group of people. They are keeping me down.
As far as the fear of failure, the fear of failure, no, I have to say this. The fear of failure is the stupidest fear that exists, because if you don't do something because you're afraid of failing, you've already failed. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Get rid of the fear of failure.
But nobody's going to, nobody's going to do that. What they're going to do is they're going to say, I'm not even going to try because the game is rigged. And,
but then they failed. Then they've already failed.
They have, but they've also bought into the nonsense.
Okay. So,
all right,
guys,
Rick, go.
As the philosopher in the group, let's define greed really precisely. Okay, you ready?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, first of all, being self-interested, that's the kind of spectrum that we're talking about here, okay? One step more than being self-interested is being selfish, meaning you have more than you need to survive and you're not sharing. If you actually want more than your share, because people are going to have more than their share kind of by accident. They didn't really mean to. They just kind of do, and they don't realize that's the problem. Like, that's not greedy. Greedy is when you want more than your share. Okay?
Okay.
Now, how we define what your share is, it's hard. Now, there's another line, though, in that if you so want more than your share that you're willing to lie, cheat, and steal, kidnap, rape, or kill to get what you want, then you've crossed a line, and that line is designated as best we can through law, and we say now you're a criminal. Okay, it's not perfect; it's not a perfect line, but that's the line. There is where you can be greedy, and that's okay, because how are we going to? We don't want thought police, right?
Okay, but certainly there must be some things that are morally questionable without crossing the line into being criminally wrong.
No, the line is the same. It's just a question of disagreements about where we draw it. Okay, the law is our attempt to draw a moral line, and some moral lines are just not worth it. Like is it moral for me to break this little popsicle stick? I don't know. Maybe my son really wanted that popsicle stick. He left it there on purpose. But maybe he just didn't throw it away like he should have. So there's a moral question there, but it's too small of a moral question for the law to get involved in. Okay.
Right, that's what I'm saying. There is a whole area.
But there's nothing that says the law couldn't get into this area. Okay, because it is a moral question.
All right, we don't have the infrastructure to do that. So
exactly. But my point is they're all part of the same spectrum, which is where do we draw the line? Okay, what's right and wrong? Our attempt to do that is with law, and it's not perfect, but it is what it is. But so that same little spectrum that I just mentioned exists when you act as an individual, but it also exists collectively when we act as voters. It exists when a politician is making their own decisions in terms of how they use their power. Same with how we deal with foreign nations and how we, the living, deal with the future. So. And the main point I wanted to make here is that we never, never, never want to stop people from being greedy, because that requires thought police. We just want to stop people from crossing the line and using inappropriate actions to fulfill their greed. Okay.
So this is a really good discussion. We're out of time for today, but this has brought up a lot of thought, a lot of memes through this show. So let's continue this discussion next week. Join us back here or politicalfixradio.com. We'll be back with you next week, same time, same channel.
Wait, I have a question.
On behalf of
how many memes could a Jabberjay meme if a Jabberjay couldn't meme memes?
That's good. All right. So on behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Emmernick, and myself, Heather Vail, have a fantastic week. From The Political Fix.
Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vail Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.